Blog Talk Radio.
Expressing sincere gratitude, you know, came to my attention a little while ago that we basically have done a little over 40 shows, in a sense, on Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And think about that. Yeah, it kind of really kind of put that in focus and perspective. 40 shows, over 40 now. Over the years, we have done more than that. When I think about those 40 shows being on that platform and giving others an opportunity to hear what we do here, what Black Men Talk, it kind of rings in the heart. Special. And I want to thank those platforms for allowing us to be on it. But I also want to take time to express gratitude for the folks that have came on throughout the years, the many different guests that came on and joined the conversation, expressed the conversation. And then I've said this before, some run through the conversation, some run away from it. And I want to thank those who are running towards the conversation, not running away from it, because talking is not necessarily an easy thing to do when you're not sure who's listening. It's a different thing. You have a conversation with someone one-on-one, and you feel a sense of privacy. But you open yourself up to basically to anyone hearing some in-depth, personalized things about yourself, could be a little frightening. But the guests that came on and the two gentlemen that are going to join me in a little bit, they have done it and done it with ease. I want to express some gratitude for that. I'm Mark Elliott, soon to be joined by Mr. Denise, Mr. Charles. And we are One Black Man Talk. It's a male provocative conversation that we give our perspective on life, love, and relationships. Always shooting for honest self-evaluation and boldly saying some things that need to be said. I want to go into something. This is one thing I don't think we talked about in the years of doing this show, is the death penalty. And for whatever reason, I guess we just didn't kind of veer off into it, but this came to my attention a couple of weeks ago, and I've been meaning to talk about it, but didn't really get a chance to. And in South Carolina, they passed a law. South Carolina is not the only state, but they passed a law now that when someone is on death penalty, was on the death row and facing death penalty, they're going to be given an opportunity to basically die by electrician, the electrical part of an arm, to be stand in front of a firing squad and be executed that way. So, you know, for us as Black men and as Black people, we look at death row a little differently, I think, than other Americans, and we're probably going to discuss that in a sense, what we kind of sense, because a lot of times the majority of people that are on death row look like me. For whatever reason, they tend to kind of favor my hue, my complexion, my nationality. And it's interesting, when this article, or when this bill became law, and think of South Carolina a few months ago, they haven't yet to basically execute anyone this way yet. Well, that's going to change on April 29th in a few weeks, because Richard Benjamin Moore, a Black man, had spent more than two decades on the state's death row. He was convicted in 1999 of killing a convenience store employee. He's going to be the first one to be killed in the state of South Carolina by fire and execution. And basically what they do is, if I understand it, they put a hood over the person's head, and I guess they tie you, or your arms are tied or feet are tied, and you stand there, and they put a target on the person's heart. And I believe three people fire aim at this individual's heart, and that's the way of killing the inmate. I'm going to come to you first, Mr. Charles. When you hear of such things that's going on, and I think this is one of seven states that has this now, but South Carolina kind of moved to the forefront in a sense of this is getting ready to take real soon, imminent, that they're allowing folks now to die by electrician, shocked or basically lethal injection. You stand in front of a firing squad. Want to kind of get your reaction and your thoughts, because as I said earlier, you know, not that we talk about stuff that's going on in death row often or even approach it, but it has this kind of certain feeling in our community when you even hear the name Death Row. Good morning, man. Welcome to When Black Men Talk. Your response, Mr. Jones.
Hey, good morning. I guess I'm kind of torn on this, and I understand the thinking that the firing squad is quite archaic, and then we're thinking about being tied up, and we reference to things that happened, to some horrific things that happened to people of color down south for years. So I'm not, I guess what I'm saying is I understand the frustration. I understand why people might think this is barbaric. But when you think about, you mentioned about, you know, electrocution, think about the other way of lethal injection. I really got to think about this because I see it from a number of different ways. But at the end of the day, for me, if they decide to do this and they use it, I don't like it. But if they're going to do it, I don't think that it should have race. Hopefully, doesn't come into play. I think if that's what they're going to do, is going to be how they decide to use it. But at the end of the day, while I talk about it, I don't really want it to happen this way. The death itself is a death, man. And I think it's different. I think people look at it where, well, if he dies by lethal injection, then it's easier, it's soothing. It's a death, man. It's a death penalty. And I'm not saying that it's the right thing to do. You choose what you want and how you want to look at it. But at the end, I'm really looking at the death. So it doesn't really matter how you die to the individual night, but I'm just saying in general. That's a question I think that people need to look at. And like I said, I'm not saying one way or another that I'm correct about that. I think about the actual act and the death itself more than I do about the way that it's done.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Yeah, the death itself is something that sometimes we overlook, that a person is actually losing their lives. And I think sometimes that happens because we realize, we assume this person's done something that brought this upon themselves. And I know in the past there's been people that have been on death row that have been completely innocent. Some have lost their lives, and some have basically been given the chance to prove themselves that they were innocent. And that's one of the things about the death row situation in general. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, you're sure the person is basically guilty of the crime that they're being accused of. But as I said earlier, a lot of times when you look at the folks that are waiting on death row, they look like us. Mr. DeMaurice, your response. Good morning, man.
Good morning, and that's my concern, man. I, as somebody who, you know, I've watched many cases over the years where, you know, people are wrongly convicted of crimes, and then they find out years later, like 20, 30, 40 years later, that they're innocent. And I wouldn't want that on my head, man. I wouldn't want to be part of the firing squad. I wouldn't want to stick the needle, you know, the injection in somebody or, you know, I know Robin Harris years ago used to joke about, you know, he'd gladly, you know, hit the lever to execute people, stuff like that. But, you know, I know there have been some horrific crimes and things of that sort, and you kind of say in your head, yeah, the death penalty for folks. But do you really want that on your conscience of being the person that you know, executes that? And like I said, people of color, man, they get wrongly convicted all the time. And, you know, are we really sure that this is the person that committed the crime, or if they were set up, or if they were, you know, trying to, you know, get this case, you know, done with and get it under wraps? And just grabbing a person that they think or they wanted to kind of convict. So I'm like Mr. Charles. I'm really kind of conflicted with this as a society. How do we come to a point where we take somebody else's life? Even though there have been some horrific crimes, I think the punishment to me is to make that person every day think of what they did to put themselves in a situation where they have to live with that, and maybe make some amends to that instead of just taking a life. I know that Illinois years ago abolished the death penalty. It was a governor who abolished it, and he took some flack for it. He really took some flack for it, but I thought it was a good move because there were so many people on death row that were wrongly convicted. And at the time, you could see on the governor's face, like, you know, I don't want to be the one that, you know, put a person in death row and take their lives and then find out later that they didn't do it, you know. He took some flack for it, but I commended him, even though he wasn't a favorite governor of mine, I commended him for stepping up and saying, you know, we're no longer going to do that. But I don't know if this state has rescinded on that. I haven't heard that. But, yeah, I'm really conflicted on this. And, it does affect, you know, people of color and people who look like me. And, I was never kind of, you know, settled with that. And I know I remember doing a discussion in college about this, and people were going back and forth. But over the years, you kind of look at it from a different perspective based on what we're talking about today about people of color.
Yeah. April 29th is scheduled to be the date for Richard Benjamin Moore. The gentleman's 57 years old. Looked just like us, man. He looked just like us. He's was found guilty of killing a convenience store owner or employee back in 1999, and he's been on death row for a little over two decades. So that is scheduled to take place in a matter of less than 2 weeks. As we sit here and put this show together, a little less than 2 weeks, and I looked at the picture of him, and I kind of wonder what must be going through his mind. I mean, I'm sure he kind of had a sense for years this day was come, but when they walk up to him and basically give him the opportunity to sign off which one he's going to choose to basically be the way he leaves this earth, that's deep, bro. That's really, really deep. We're going to pivot a little bit to actually pivot a lot in a sense. I want to spend – we've talked about this before, but I want to spend – a little time or some time talking about listening, because I think to me, listening is the most undervalued component of any relationship or conversation. And it's amazing to me how important listening is, but it's done very little, very little. It's not given anything. And it's amazing how you can tell when someone really hasn't paid attention or listened, because it almost like it's lost in translation. It's like they basically weren't paying attention. And what I've noticed, is that when you're engaging in a conversation with someone and you're saying certain things, kind of a way they don't even realize they give it back to you, they weren't paying attention, because they'll say to you later, I thought you said no. You knew you weren't paying attention to what I said. So they always come back and say, I thought you know, that's where you want to interpret. That's how it got lost in translation. But in reality, Mr. Demers, I always kind of feel like if you're having a conversation, especially in your relationship, it could be a friendship or whatever the case may be, if you're taking time out to listen, the person's basically sharing some of their thoughts, their inner feelings, their ideas, something that's important to them. And if you're not really focusing on listening, what does that say about how you feel about that person?
Well, basically, it says that you don't really respect what that person is saying. But I look at it in two ways in listening. Either people listen to understand or people listen to respond. So if you're listening to understand, you're trying to understand the person's perspective so you can better respond to the person, what they're saying, or respond to what's going on in the conversation. But I think a lot of people just listen to respond because they already have an idea of what they're going to say in their head. They're just waiting for an opportunity for you to stop talking and then just interject what they want to say in the first place. And that makes the conversation really more intense and really combative, because the person who had been talking that hasn't been listened to, now you're pretty much furious. Now you feel like, you know, okay, this person's really not listening. They're not hearing what I'm saying. They don't understand what I'm saying. And it's not because they're not an intelligent person. It's because they didn't really want to understand what you're saying in the first place, because they're probably caught up in their feelings and then they're not interested. They're really not taking your words and really trying to understand what you're trying to say to resolve the issue. They're just caught up in their feelings. They want to say what they want to say, and it becomes combative at that particular time where nobody's listening. Everybody is, you know, caught up in their feelings, and now you have a bigger problem than you had before.
So true, because what that does is moves you away from really what the problem or the issue could have been. And what I find, to kind of piggyback on what you said, what I find really kind of interesting, a lot of times when you're talking, you don't even get a chance to finish sometimes. They want to jump in because they want to respond so quickly without even listening and digesting what you said. They basically want to, as you stated, in their feelings, they want to kind of respond and almost kind of respond to show you you're wrong. It's a response to show you, no, you're wrong about this, blah, blah, blah. They want to basically, whatever you're feeling and thinking, they want to change that narrative to what they want you to believe and think. So, Mr. Charles, we approach listening of its importance in the sense of a conversation, but more so in a conversation and relationship, how it's basically devalued. It's not seen as important. And again, when someone basically is saying, or you're saying something to someone of a, you know, in a certain nature, and it doesn't seem like they're focusing on listening and understanding, how do you interpret that, sir?
Well, no, excuse me. I think it's to a point where it also can be disrespectful in a way. It depends on how you look at it. But everybody has their opinion, excuse me, and they should be able to express it no matter how you may feel about it. And I think that's part of respect. I think that we live in a culture now that's really about people trying to win. And particularly if it comes to what may be considered debates or whatever, even in relationships, everybody wants to, a lot of people want to be right. And we have been programmed or experienced through our experiences, we feel like we have to be right instead of really understanding and getting to the gist of a conversation or what's going on to maybe coming up with a solution. But instead, the focus oftentimes is wanting to be correct or being the person that is deemed as being the winner or being right. So I think you, in that notion, you lose the opportunity to really to deal with some things and come up with it. And then also to the point of learning, because you may think you know something and have all of the answers. And then you go, well, wow, once you really listen to a person, give them a chance to respond and say their piece, you may not totally agree with them, but you might actually have a different perspective or a different outlook on something. So I think listening is so key. It is very key, but also, as Demarice mentioned before, I think it was listening to really truly understand and not listening, waiting for your opportunity to speak or challenge.
Yeah, you touched on something that was really interesting. I agree with that part about respect, because I think it does show a lack of respect and show a lack of concern and care as well. But I want to ride on something you said about being right, because I think the focus a lot of times, Mr. DeMaurice, is on trying to be right. And what does that mean to a person where they just feel like they have to be right? And not only have to be right, they must prove to you that they're right, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, it's nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody wants to lose face in these discussions. And everybody feels like how they feel, what they said, what transpired in their head and their perception of the issue. They always want to be right. Nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody wants to take an L, as they say. So no matter whether or not you're wrong, I had a buddy who like he was I guess in this heated discussion. He was dead wrong, and so after the discussion, you know, he just argued, and they never resolved it. And he was like afterwards, like, man, you ain't have my back on such and such. I'm like, dude, you were wrong. You were dead wrong. I'm like, I'm not backing that up. Well, you my boy, you supposed to back me up no matter what. Nah, man, it was wrong. So I didn't get involved in it. I stepped back, and I didn't want to be a part of it. I said, but you were dead wrong with that, and I don't know why you kept arguing when the points were proven that you were wrong. And so I guess, you know, people have, you know, I think what it comes down to, as my pop always says, pride. People have pride where if you're he always says pride comes before a fall. And I know you probably heard that too when you were gloating about, you know, picks and all that other stuff. You know,
and, oh, come on, that, man. But,
yeah, he always says that. You know, when I get too high on some things, he's like, hey, you remember pride comes before a fall. And so don't be so prideful about, you know, how you feel and all this other stuff, because you may be wrong. And so I always remember that, you know, just coming up, and he still says it to me to this day. But I think it's a lot of pride that goes with, I got to be right no matter what. And even when I'm wrong, I'm right, kind of. And I see that in, like, you know, not all women, but a lot of women that I've been associated with or have relationships with. It's like, you'd rather go to your grave believing this, and you know it's dead wrong. But instead of admitting, you know, I'm wrong, you know, I'm sorry, let me apologize, you'll hold on to it because it's this thing that's in you that says, I got to win this. And what do you win? What do you win? You don't win anything. There's no prize at the end. It just shows that, you know, you are so dead set on being wrong that, you know, and trying to kind of convince people that you're right, that you ultimately look like a fool in the situation.
You put something in the center that I want to go to, in a sense, when it comes to dealing with the opposite sex for us, when it comes to dealing with women. And you touched on the point about having back, which I think Black people, to me, overall, have basically digested that dumbass theory about having somebody's back way too much. And that's why you got people out here doing dumbass things and expecting you to back them up and support them. And even with my children or anyone that I'm associated with, wrong is wrong and right is right. I'll support you when you're right. And when you're wrong, you got nothing from me but the truth. And if that means we have to part our ways from not knowing each other, I'm good with that. But I think for so long we have basically, you know, sat at the table and just digested, I got your back. And we think that's something of coolness. And it's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard of. When you're supporting someone just because you feel a certain way about them and you want to show your affection and you want to show your bond to them, in a sense, because you're going to get behind them. No. To me, it's just flat-out ignorance. But I want to go to the point of the relationship sense with the opposite sex, because, as you stated, they will basically, a good majority, can't say all, but a good majority, way many, will basically rather deny taking responsibility, accountability, and owning up to something when they're wrong. They rather deflect. They rather start another conversation, move away from it, to basically just understand and own it. And I'm wondering, Mr. Charles, here's what I don't think they don't understand or don't really care. What does that do to a fabric of a relationship with them when they choose to do that, Mr. Charles?
Wow. I think that people, when you mention that, I think the individual, you're talking about relationships, is so caught up in their emotions and their pride that if they don't believe that their mate is really backing them or really, even if you don't, point of it, they want you almost to say something to them. Say, yeah, you're right, baby. Tell them, or something to that effect. But they don't understand that if you want to think a person has your back, if that's how you think or that's how you believe, or you want a person to say they have your back, sometimes the way that other person shows you that they have your back, particularly as a mate, if they know you're there wrong and you're still arguing with the person and whatever, they don't say anything and they don't belittle you in front of, as they say back in the day, company, right? So they listen and they stay with you. But then on the flip side, after it's done, they pull you aside and kind of let you know, explain something to you so you receive it and hopefully learn from it. That doesn't often happen. But that's the key to it, where if you want to say a person needs to have your back, if that's what you believe, sometimes being silent is the best thing. It's the best thing, because if they were to say something or agree with another party, you totally would feel embarrassed and your ego would be shot. But again, it depends on how people deal with relationships and what they and how they see things.
Yeah, but I want to come back with you with this. Again, when someone inside, we're talking about women here. This is flatly women that you may have dealt with or seen or experienced. Would you come across when they're basically wrong, would not take ownership of it, and would deflect and go around it? What does that do to the fiber of the relationship, if it does anything?
Well, in regards to relationship, it depends on what you have. The key for me would be if I've been in that situation or have or going to be, then I have to be able to talk to that person and let them know. If I just let it keep going on and on, it can destroy the fiber of it, because you're just agreeing to get along, and that's not healthy for a relationship. But if they know I have their best interest at heart and I want to make sure that they're in the best light and can succeed and move forward, then I have to initiate and have a conversation. Because if I just say something just to get along, it's going to develop a pattern, or it possibly could.
Mr. DeMaurice, does it do anything to the fiber of a relationship that you may have experienced, or a potential relationship that you may hope to experience, where the other party just will not own up to right or wrong?
You basically, when you're doing that, you're building a relationship on falsehood. You're building that person up to be something that they're not. And that destroys the relationship, because eventually the truth is going to come out. And you kind of let this person, if you kind of let this person feel the way they feel without giving them the truth, then how can you trust this person when things get really, really tight? How can you trust that this person is, you know, really has your back and really, it really going to tell you the truth about a lot of things? And when I think about this too with women, I think about this with also celebrities, where you guys, you know, I was thinking about some recording artists who anything that they put out, you know, they have people around them like, yeah, that's good. You know, oh, that's the best I ever heard, all that. And all the stuff was garbage. And so basically, that person may be just using you to be in that relationship and just keeping things, you know, an even keel and stuff, because they're benefiting from the relationship and because of what you're able to get or gain. But as soon as you get to a point where you can't gain in your wrong positions anymore, then they just drop you like you know, a hot potato. So how can you trust a person that's not going to give you the truth? That's why I appreciate you two tremendously, because no matter what I do, if it's not right, you'll go, hey, you'll say, cuz, here's the thing. You know, I won't steer you wrong on this, but such and such and such. Mr. Charles would say the same thing, like, listen, think about it this way. And so, and I think I want to hope that I do the same thing to you two when you know, things aren't really right. And so you can trust people like that because you know they have your best interest at heart. But when you don't do that, you don't have the other person's best interest at heart. So how can you really kind of rely on that person when things get really, really serious?
Yeah, I agree with that. I also find that the word trust you hit on was strong, because that's what it does for me. It tears away at the fiber of the relationship, because now I look at things you say and I'm not fully invested trusting what's coming out of your mouth. And I'm somewhat analyzing the things that come out of your mouth, because I'm starting to see from your perspective, you don't want to look at it from an honest manner. You want to look at it from a right and wrong manner. And you always want to be right. So, and it's almost second nature for me. I start to kind of look at, and I devalue you some in my mind, because I can no longer just fully trust. And it's not about you just flat out lying to me. It just becomes your judgment, the way you see things, the way you analyze, and you really can't fully allow yourself to embrace the reality. You're more into kind of shading and coloring reality than accepting reality. So it kind of tears away at that fiber to where when you're talking, especially when it comes to something that's really strong, I'm going to look at it a little more sternly, because I'm not sure I could just take your word for it. And if I'm into you, we're really into you, I should be able to just take your word without question. I would like to be able to take your word without, no question marks, none. But now, from time to time, that question mark is going to appear quite a bit, because of your thought process, how you arrive at things. And to me, you're sold or shown me that you're more concerned with basically having things be portrayed the way you want them to be, not necessarily a matter of being correct and understanding and growing from it and learning from it. No, you want to control what's basically goes on and how it goes on. You want to be the strength puller. And that's interesting. I want to get to something I thought of a little while ago. And it's basically breathing for tomorrow. You know, we're breathing right now, and we're taking in air, and we're in the moment. But I believe we should also breathe for tomorrow. And when I say that, Mr. Charles, if I say breathing for tomorrow, what tends to come with that small, simple phrase, sir?
Well, for me, I think breathing for tomorrow is your next path, your next journey, where you're headed. And maybe perhaps setting a tone for the next steps or the next things that you're going to take on. And also, too, possibly as to, it takes a lot to do this. Not everybody's equipped or even thinks about it, but how you want to start living your life. Real quick, I'm not sure how people think about this, but I always thought as I progressed as a man and grew as a man that I would reach a certain level of maturity, certain things I wanted to do as a man and have a certain consciousness as a man. And that's part of you think about those next steps. So that's how I see that from that standpoint. And I always remind myself that you can't go back to what you were before, because we're moving forward in the path to just be better and continue to grow as a man.
Yeah, it kind of forces you to kind of someone being evaluating to improve, to not just selling for what is good, to kind of always in a way thinking of, okay, for tomorrow, what is good today? Not to say it won't be good tomorrow, but it could be a little better for tomorrow. And help them prepare for what tomorrow may bring, you know, in so many aspects of your life, your health, you know, your well-being, your mental well-being, your financial well-being. Give us some thought in breathing for tomorrow. What is that reaction of phrase said to you, Mr. Dingris?
It's a mantra that I live by, that I want to get better every day. And think about this, and I probably said it on the show before, like every time my daughter says, you know, happy birthday, you know, every year, she's like, oh, you're getting old. And I'm like, nah, baby, I'm getting better. And so it's always striving to get better, to do things better, to think better, to have a better way of doing things, to move forward, to not be the man I was yesterday. I'm so glad I'm not the man I was yesterday, and being a better man each and every day. Some days, you know, you get the bear. Sometimes the bear gets you on those days. But it's always kind of a thought in your head, like, okay, how can I do this better? How can I handle this better? How can I strive to be better? How can I learn a new skill? How can I learn something that I didn't know before? And just not resting on your laurels that you know everything and you're arrived, because this journey of manhood is that. It's a journey. It's not a destination. You're continuing to evolve no matter what age you are. And I've learned that from the elders that I'm around, that, you know, no matter, you know, what the physical says, you know, the mind is still sharp, the, you know, the thoughts are still there, and you do what you can. You do as much as you can for as long as you can, and always moving forward, not going back.
There it is. Pivoting just a little bit from that of reading for tomorrow, I also believe as men we should carry a strong sense of resilience, that we need to always have a level of resilience just ready to go and pull from and pull it from, because there's going to be things that happen in life. You know, whether we want to deal with them or not, there are going to be things thrown in front of you. And sometimes they're thrown in front of you, the majority of times, if not all the times, they're thrown in front of you to see how you're going to respond and if you can learn and gather some strength from it to move on. And a lot of times I think that those moments, we look at it and we take it personal and we feel like something is basically wrong or we've done something to have this happen. And we may spend more time on that than understanding that it's kind of given to us to have us further along in that journey, be better, be stronger, and be equipped to deal with other things that may come along. Which just as exists when persons use mental process of behaviors in promoting personal assets and protecting themselves from potential negative passive stressors. Now, I wanted to take this, Mr. DeMaurice, and translate this to a relationship, because, you know, we've all basically been in situations that may not have worked to our benefit, and we've had to be resilient in a sense and kind of move away from it. So I wanted to kind of go into this a little bit in the sense of relationship. How does this transfer to personal relationships that you may have encountered and experienced?
Wow. I'm going to try to understand what you're saying, because that's a loaded question, bro. It's a real loaded question.
That's what we do here, boss.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. Man, it's I think being a man and being in a relationship, because we're always taught how to get the girl, but we ain't always taught how to keep the girl. And so we go through a lot of we go through a big learning curve in relationships, and then, you know, we finally fine-tune what we need to do and how it needs to work and all this other stuff. And then we find out that maybe, you know, all the stuff that we learned, we haven't learned all the stuff that we need to learn to continue it on. But, man, I think it's hard. I know it's hard for me to sustain relationships, because I bounce in between trying to be independent and being in a relationship and not losing myself. Because in the past, I've lost myself in relationships and given everything and then gotten nothing back. And then, you know, you learn from that and you try to, you know, be stronger in future relationships and try not to make the mistakes of the past. So I know for me as a man, it's kind of hard because, you know, like I said, we've always been taught how to get the girl, how to get the number, and, you know, put the fancy kind of, you know, talk to it and the rap and all that other stuff. And then now the rubber meets the road and you got to really do some things to sustain a relationship. And then you're like, you're stuck. So for me, I know it's kind of hard and to kind of say, you know, to give of myself, to be resilient, to be strong in those relationships and keep them alive and keep them going and keep sacrificing myself doing it. And I think it's hard for not only men, but I think it's hard for women because we're all not taught how to be in relationships sometimes. So I don't know if that's answering your question, but I know it's hard to be resilient sometimes, especially if you're selfish too. And I found that I'm selfish sometimes in relationships that I know now I want what I want, and I'm not settling for anything else. So I'm probably not going to be a good person to be in a relationship now because, you know, I'm kind of stuck where I am and knowing my worth and knowing what I deserve. And so, bro, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but that's when you're saying that, that's the first thoughts that came to my mind.
No, we go with our first thought, man. We go with our first thought, which, you know, that's what we do. But I want to just give you a question back real quick, in a sense, because I hear you saying you gave and you didn't give back. And I'm wondering, if you don't mind, we can go back to that right there, because I think we all have experienced that, you know, in some form or fashion. And the question I would have is, do we allow that situation to hamper us from getting what we can get in the future? Because I think sometimes that situation can predetermine. We may give that too much credence to where it predetermines, and it kind of sells us short for the future. Instead of just, to me, I look at situations like that. If I gave too much and I didn't get nothing back, I cut it off. I cut it off, and I kind of like compartmentalize, and I put it in a box by itself. But what I really try to do, in essence, is make sure there's no bleed over from that. Meaning, you know, when I try to do that with anything or relations I deal with, in other words, there's no bleed over effect. Nothing comes from that into this. Because if I allow the bleed over, it basically short circuit and short cuts me from enjoying anything else that could be totally different. So I want to go back to that point, because I think a lot of men, and maybe women too, experience that when we kind of give of ourselves. And sometimes we may have gave ourselves to a person that we had no business giving that to. We just had no, we stand back and look, that person wasn't worthy of such. And we don't focus on that as much as we might have focused on, okay, that we gave. Because to me, and this is another thing too, I think when we love someone or we care for someone, if you empty out your chamber and you felt that, it is what it is. You know, how what they did with it, how they interpreted what they gave back, whatever. Because even the experience of loving someone is such a beautiful thing. It's not something that's vibrant. And that's what we're made to do. So even if we can kind of start to see it that way, you can kind of maybe stop the bleed over. So I want to kind of go back to your point gave. Do you think that it's kind of short circuit some maybe – things that you might have came, or some things that might have came after that?
That's the issue here. It's like, in some respects, they say that you're supposed to give without thinking about what you're getting back in return. You just give. And, you know, but you find yourself losing out in situations like that. And so it does set up a situation where it hampers you in future relationships. So what I've been thinking of, or what I've been doing lately, is that I'm going to match your energy. So if you give in energy, I'm going to give back the same energy. And it's going to be, you know, and I hate to say this kind of phrase, tit for tat. You know, it's going to be the same energy, you know.
I've heard that a lot over the years, bro. I'm sorry, man.
Tit for tat, yeah. It's like, so I'm going to match your energy. You first. You know, it ain't going to be me first now. It's going to be you first. Okay, you're going to, okay, how about that? Okay, yeah. You know, but when I get to the point where I can't match your energy, I'm like, oh, you know what, I can't match this, so I'm going to let you know. Like, you know, you're feeling this way, I'm not feeling this way, so I'm not going to fool you in that sense where I'm going to fake, you know, giving you certain energy that I know I can't sustain and I can't give. And so instead of just, because you find yourself in relationships where you're giving all this energy and you're not getting it back, And you need that energy back to kind of reinforce, like, am I going in the right direction? Is the person feeling the same way I'm feeling? And sometimes we go overboard and we're feeling all these feelings, and the person is like, I'm not really there, but, mm-hmm. Thanks for the gift and thanks for the effort, but, I'm just not there. And so, yeah, we're told sometimes, like, just love and do all this stuff without – I think in some respects you can do that in life. I don't know if it's always in relationships you can do that and get back the stuff you need to keep that energy going and to keep that kind of momentum moving forward. And so I think over the years what I've done is that I've been the one – I know for me it's like I'm giving this energy – I'm letting the person know up front, this is how I feel. This is, this is my intention and all this other stuff. And you go, yeah, that's nice. The person goes, yeah, that's nice and all that. And they may be in the moment, in the intimate moments, they're feeling the same way. But, as men, sometimes we may feel that way in the moment too. But after we get in the shower, put the clothes on and drive away, it's like, wait a minute. That ain't what I meant. And now you're getting the text message, you're getting all this stuff, and you're going, oh, no, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have gone that far. The music was playing. I was, I was in the mood at that particular time. I was feeling that at that particular time. But, this ain't what I fit. So now I'm at a point, like I said, matching energy for energy. Not kind of going overboard with this, because I want to make sure that when I make that step, step forward, that stone is solid when I'm making that step, so I can stand on it and be ready to make that next step.
I'm sitting here, man. I'm kind of cracking up to myself, because it's when you said about the intimacy part, that's where you're saying it. It kind of reminds me of, and it's just my opinion. It kind of reminds me of, like, going shopping when you're hungry, food shopping. Mm-hmm. You're going to buy some things you don't even want to eat because you're just hungry. You're just hungry. So you're going to – they tell you don't go shopping when you're hungry, food shopping, because you're going to just go out there and buy. Oh, yeah, you're buying on your hunger. And then sometimes when intimacy is really going on, like, the music is playing, the endorphins – have your mouth say some things that may not really be coming from your heart. They're coming from the moment. They're coming from the euphoria of what just took place and all that. And I'm not saying you don't speak at those times, but I think we have to be aware of, is it the moment speaking or is our heart speaking? And I truly believe, especially for men, if we allow our hearts to speak more and not be afraid to. And again, if it happens and it doesn't work out, you empty out, you know what? As a man, you pack it up, you're resilient, you move on. But at least your heart was able to experience, and if their heart didn't connect with it, at the end of the day, it's their loss. Because they lost out on a person that could enhance their life, that could love them good, love them well, brought something to them. And if they weren't able to understand that and accept that, then that's their loss. That is. Because if you know yourself of value, who you are, and what you're able to give someone, and if they're not willing to accept it or it doesn't mean that to them, it's better than they don't have it, because they're not going to do right by it. But all I'm saying is we got to be careful as men to make sure that we're not giving it to someone we should be giving it to based on we gave it to someone that wasn't valuable for it and they didn't return it. So now we might be with someone that honestly deserves it, and we're basically taking baby steps to give it to them, and we're kind of, hugging our heart to not give it to them because of that idiot that we gave it to. So that's just my thinking, but coming to you, Mr. Charleston, you've been sitting back and listening. And you can respond to what me and Mr. Demarius are speaking of if you found yourself in that situation, or just the resiliency, how it has played out in relations for you, sir.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack. That went all under the mulberry bush and came down the rabbit hole, but it's all good. But, I feel like Alice. Which way do I turn? Which way do I go? You know what I'm saying? But anyway, yeah, it's a lot there. But I want to jump back on that resiliency in the relationships in regards to when you how you approach it. I think it's admirable and it's a great goal to go after to be able to open yourself up and live and learn and love and, you know, you take it for what it is and just realize that you had the experience and you might have helped somebody be better. But when you've had different experiences, like DeMarie said, it's like, man, first thing you think about is protecting your heart. That's just natural. And you think about being a man and being strong and trying to be resilient, but no one wants to be hurt. And I know for me, it's like, when I did venture down that rabbit hole and I was all in, and it was like we called each other at the wrong time. Like when that person was really into it, maybe I wasn't. And then we were like, it's just past midnight. When I got to that stage, it already bypassed that marker. And we can never reconnect at the same place anymore. But I don't know if I would say that I match the energy. I just take my time a little bit more in regards to when I give. You out when I go all in. And I'm not afraid to go all in, but I'm just not going to jump at the situation because that pain, if you experience it, you might love and you don't, you might call it rejection or you're not that person that is the same place. You don't get that back. It hurts, man. Even as a man, you know, some people are stronger than that. I'm a man. Okay, you can be all that. Be honest. I know my heart. I know my feelings. I know who I am. And that's part of being resilient. So, you have to be careful because when you're with your heart, when you let somebody touch your heart, it can affect your day to day, it can affect your mental, how you go about your living your life, because it's emotional and it affects how you work daily, how you deal with life daily, and that's not something that often we can afford to do unless you know it's real, and you are getting that back. That's just me.
No, I get that. I get that. And I think that's where a lot of us, and I'm speaking of men when I say this, we find ourselves, you know, we get hurt and we kind of basically, we start to wear like a vest in a sense. And we want to make sure the vest starts to take the penetration and our heart doesn't anymore. And we want to kind of, make sure the vest is kind of taking all of the and we're not basically, you know, feeling that. And there's good to that, and there's a flip side, there's bad. And I just was just speaking in the sense of the bad to where got to be aware that hurt is a part of life. Hurt is a part of life. And I'm not saying you just go out there and totally make yourself wide open, but understand that we got past the hurt. All the hurt that we experienced in life, through the grace of God, we got past it. And we will continue to get past it. And I'm not saying that that should lead to no fear of getting hurt. I'm saying we should understand what hurt has done to us and is it bleeding over and jarring and kind of blurring our decision-making and our thought process as we move forward. Because I would hate for us as men to kind of basically short side another situation that deserves our full attention, our full heart, based on what happened previous. And I think for women, when we see women that are bitter, you know it. You may not know exactly how, but you kind of have an idea from the GPS where it came from, what may have happened. But as men, we walk around. And we may not be bitter, but we're super protective. You know, we're guarded. We're up there. And we're like this and that. And in real talk, a lot of us has gave women with big asses stuff that we shouldn't have gave. You know, because we looked at them physically, and we really wanted that in our life long term. We didn't want her. We wanted what she offered sexually in our life for a long term. So we're a little confused, and I'm a little, we were confused, and we thought because of that,
you know, I'm feeling this and da-da-da-da, and we didn't see her for who she was. And we saw her physically. And that's what men do. It's just being honest. And then from that, when that didn't materialize, we tend to move on and go and think, okay, well, I got to defend. Mm-mm. Again, the next one may come around, her ass may not be as big. Her face may not be as pretty, but her heart may be in the right spot. I mean, her willingness to love you may be there. Her willingness to nurture may be there. Now we're taking pitter-patter steps. We're moving like, mm-mm. And, you know, realistically, we shouldn't be going in with a big ass. All we're doing is enjoying it. You know, you go to a restaurant to enjoy a steak. You know, a restaurant that serves a steak can't give you much, that's selling a steak and serving a steak can't give you much more than a steak. You know, that's what, so sometimes we went to the restaurant looking to get more than what the restaurant was actually willing to offer. And then we didn't come back, we're in our feelings. So all I'm saying is, men, we have to be real careful of the bleed over. Don't allow previous situations that wasn't really worth you anyway to affect what you're doing today. You know, and that takes some going back and reevaluating and understanding, too, the role that you played in that. You know, we focus on, okay, what she didn't do, she didn't give. Okay, what role did I play? You know, how did I get to giving her this in the first place? If she wasn't giving that back to me, why am I giving her this anyway? How did I get to that role? You know, was I really feeling it in my heart? Or was I feeling it in my groin and my eyes? And be truthful about it with yourself. Really go back and reevaluate and understand it and then come away from that. And then maybe you realize that hurt that you kind of, you know, were subjected to wasn't based on what they were all doing, is that you put yourself in a situation where it just wasn't where you needed to be. I'm a firm believer, and I know I said this on a couple of earlier shows, and I really want to go into it, and the heart basically will guide you where you need to be. And as I said before, I just learned this out. Well, your heart is sending out rays all the time, 3 feet in front of you. Think about that. 3 feet before you walk into a room, your heart is basically scoping out what's going on and kind of sensing. So when you're with someone and you just meet someone and you're vibing with that person, your heart is picking up on their heart, whether you believe it or not. You're looking there visually, you're thinking, and you're trying to ask these questions, but your heart's ready to predetermine, is this person really who I need to kind of spend some time with? But we focus more on the cosmetic part of it. Her eyes, or this and that. And if we were kind of take that down a notch, you know, take that down a couple of notches, allow our hearts to kind of lead us and move us in the direction, I think we'd do better as men. I just think so. I think we do. But, you know, I heard you say, Mr. Reese, we weren't taught. That's true, because we all kind of, as men, when we were younger men, we want to have the bad one, the fine one. We want to, you know, we want our friends to look at us and see us having this one, that one. And a lot of us haven't outgrown that. We haven't. We still want to sit around and wait for this one to come and that one to come and all that. And while we're trying to wait for that and look for that, she ain't worth it. Because she's been getting along basically because she looks that way. And we as men, that's what we've been chasing. And I'm not saying we have to go away and not go to unattractive women, but let's start to see them for more than what our eyes are presenting to us. Let's start to see the heart that they're carrying. Let's feel the heart that they're carrying. You know, anywhere in the world, you know, she can say some things that we know ain't right in the beginning. But we overlook that because we're trying to get her in bed. It's just like recently, you know, Cam Newton, we talk about this on the sports show a little bit. Cam Newton came out and said that, hey, these ones, they're calling themselves this and that. And they can't cook. They can't cook. They can't do X, Y, Z, but they this. So in essence, what he's saying to me is that I'm not impressed by all that flash. And a lot of times we are. I'm not impressed with that. No, who are you as a woman? At the end of the day, when you stop, you shut your damn mouth, what does it say to you about as a woman? And that's what we should be attracted to and look at and understand. And that's the type of woman we should give our heart to. Not what she makes, not. She's walking around with her titties half falling out of her dress. Mm-mm. You know, we could play with that all day. That's fun. That's cute. That's like going to the amusement park, going to Great Adventure and playing, getting on the ride and riding. But that's not the person we should be falling in love with. Let's take a little break and come back. I'll get some questions from Mr. Jim Reese, Mr. Charles. I'm Mark Elliott. Mr. Charles, Mr. Reese, I want to thank you two gentlemen for just really being raw. Because what we say is what men tend to believe and think. And we kind of keep it to ourselves. Well, we don't do that here. We talk about it. Your question's up first, sir.
Yeah, man. I was thinking about what you said, there was a Patrice O'Neill, who passed away, a comedian, talked about how we as men, dating is like fishing. We go out, we catch a big fish, we show our friends our capabilities of catching a big fish. Then we throw the fish back in. But some of the women who we end up with were fish that jump back on the boat and won't leave. That we're stuck with. I'm going to bring this up because I just text you two guys about this. And I used to think it was only me who felt this way. But I heard this on another show. I'm not going to mention the show because I don't really like the host. But one of the guests came on. And he talked about this. He was he's a comedian, and he talked about the post-nut syndrome. And those of you who don't know about post-nut syndrome is basically we as men may like a woman, really have good intentions with the woman, but after the sexual act, it's this thing about us that it's like our real feelings come out on how we feel about that particular person after we ejaculate it. So I wanted to know whether or not, am I the only one on the panel who felt that way? And, you know, have you felt this way as a man?
I don't think so. Because I think where that comes from, that syndrome, I may have understood it from a different phrase. But I think what happens if you feel different than what you felt basically after, you know, you had your nut, it's because you are blinded by the chase. And as men as being hunters, sometimes we get blinded by the chase, so to speak, meaning that it takes a lot of energy, man, whether we want to believe it or not, to see someone that we're attracted to. And then we go into the shop, the chemistry mode of, okay, how am I going to get this to happen to get her to XYZ? That is work and energy. And in the process of doing that, again, we're not focusing on her. We're focusing on, okay, what we got to do to get her to here. And then after, once you have that nut, all of that work is completed in your minds. So now, you know, after the nut is over, what are you thinking? Okay, do I like her? because that's been the main focus. That's been the road of travel. So I think that's the nature behind that, in a sense. Because you've exhorted so much to get there, to get it to this point. And that's a game within itself. So that syndrome, I can't totally say I sign off on it because that's what has happened in essence. And I don't think it takes the nut to realize you ain't like her. You knew a long way to process you ain't like her, but the fantasy of seeing her naked, of experiences with her, of doing all the sexual things, kept you going, was the fuel. So, yeah, I that one I can't really roll with because, to me, I think along the process, you got to know is the work, you know, if you're trying to get to whatever, is the work behind it. And to me, if I got to work that hard for it, I don't want it. I'm good. I just don't want it. It's like in a basketball game years ago, they said, let the game come to you. I found that works out better. you let the game come to you because you're out there trying to play against the game and going against the defense. It's a lot of work, bro. Your response, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I think I can see what you're talking about there, DeMaurice. I think looking at it, though, it's kind of like that's the at the end, that's that crown and glory, right? As you mentioned, that's what you're working for. That's what you're looking at. It's like, okay, I've seen her. I've experienced this with her physically. We went to the highest level so far, and then you start to question or think about what's next, or you start to assess the whole situation. What does she bring? You know, what's going on with you guys? And can I be with her? So with that in mind, that assessment, as Mark said, can come at any time. But then after that, it's like, okay, now where are we going? Because, you know, oftentimes the individual, once you have made that connection physically, they might become wanting to spend more time. They want to be more closer because now they've given you their prized possession. So they might be clinging. They might be might want to spend more time. They want to do certain things, and they might now come at you and let you see who the real person was. When prior to that, you might have saw the representative. Now they feel comfortable because they've given you their prized possession. And you like, take me for who I am right now, and that's who I am. And you're like, dang. What the hell? So I see where you're coming from, but I think it's just more of an assessment of the overall relationship or what you have together. And then you have to make a decision how you move forward.
There it is. Yeah, man. I like us. I like the rawness, but we do this every week, so it's cool. But your response, Mr. Difference?
Well, maybe I'm built a little different because everything, you know, I go into it like with pure intentions, liking and all that other stuff, getting to that point. And it's almost like I was thinking about what you two were saying. It's almost like you ever have a meal where it's like, yeah, that hit the spot. That hit the spot. That was right where I needed. You know, I wanted it. I went out and got it. It hit the spot. But there's some meals you have and go, yeah, it was filling, but, you know, I could have done without that. And that's how I've kind of felt sometimes when, you know, I had the intention and everything was right. But afterwards you go, you know what, this is not aligned to everything that I thought this was going to be. It wasn't the performance or anything. Everything could have been great, but it was like, you know what? This ain't it. This didn't hit the spot. This is not, I'm not seeing any kind of direction here. It's almost like your brain gets cleared at that particular point, and you kind of see things the way it's supposed to, or the way it is, not what you thought it was going to be, but the way it is, and you go, So I've oftentimes, you know, have been in situations where afterwards it's like, I don't want to do this again, or I'm not going to try this meal again, even though everything before that was, you know, the true intention, all this other stuff. So, yeah, I found myself where it's like laying there going, oh, no, I shouldn't have gone this far with this because, you know, now I see what it is. And it's like, you know, when I heard about this syndrome, I was like, yeah, I have felt that way. This has been something that I experienced in my life as a man. And it has nothing to do with the woman. It's just that this feeling you have that this is as far as it's going to go at this particular point.
I would have to believe that's got to do with the sex, though, bro. I got to believe that a lot is being based on the sex, because if the expectations and everything was there prior to the sex happening, that's the only thing that changed. That's the only thing that literally changed, because maybe the sex didn't live up to the work that was put involved. And that's
the closeness. Like, you don't feel that closeness, because you're supposed to, when you're intimate, you're supposed to feel that. Well, I think you're always supposed to feel that closeness. Like, you know, you're kind of, you know, coming together.
But
when you don't feel that, it's
but
like,
I was,
whoa.
But I'll say this, bro, and I'll say this. It may not be there the first time. It doesn't mean it won't be there. And that's the thing. It's like, what's happening is you're looking for the first time to turn your toes. And it may not, but it doesn't mean that it will not come. It's almost, you know, sometimes, you know, I know you had this in your book one time. You had this in your book about why we go back to craziness, you know, sometimes. And sometimes we go back when we know sometimes things ain't right because what has that has grown to be a level of comfort to us. We go back. And with it took a while just to get there. The door may not have opened and have been that way, but it took a while to get there to where this new person, in a sense, is still open. It has to be developed. And even her, in that particular situation, she may not even given her all to you, a lot to you, because she's still, even though she's open up to have sex with you, she's on reserve. Because there's things about her she don't want you thinking. So she may want to touch you a certain way. She ain't doing it because she don't want you walking away thinking. There's so much goes on mentally the first time you really are sexually intimate with someone. Some people can open up the first time and they give it to you. Some people, they just can't because it's even pushing themselves to even have that sex with you. But as time go along, they learn you, you learn them, and it can become beautiful music. But if everything was kind of okay until you got to that point, then it's really based on the sex. And sex, you know, it takes a lot. We don't think about it. We're more physical with it. But it takes a lot to mold that sex and have right. Now, some bodies just connect and they go. But to kind of really work it sometimes where it needs to be, it takes a little while. Because I think initially, sometimes, people aren't who they are sexually the first time they have sex. They're just not. They're basically trying to kind of hold back a little bit. They're feeling, they're insecure. They're wondering, okay, he's looking at me, he's thinking I'm this. Blah, blah. So there's a lot going on in her head that she may not be saying, but she's feeling and she's responding to. So if it was just the act itself and the person was cool, you know, you can kind of, you know, let that kind of develop, and that may come over time. When they're relaxed a little bit more, they feel who they are. And even if they're not all there, hell, you can kind of get them there by teaching them and showing them, because you may be willing to kind of get there with some instructions. So, again, I think sometimes we put so much into the pursuit of trying to get it there. And when that happens, that's where it's let down. And you can put a name on it, but what happened is your expectations weren't met. Whatever reason, they weren't met. So for that reason, you're feeling a certain way and you don't want it to happen again. And I'll give you a quick example. There was a woman that years ago, her and I started dating, and she said she wanted to be platonic. And I said, okay, no problem. We're good. So we hung that way for a while. And it was good. I had no problem with it. We went out. We did a couple of nice few things, plays, whatever. And one day she saw me talking to someone else and got jealous, real jealous. And I'm like, what you doing? You know, that's not who you and I are. She was over the next night to have sex, bro. Now, my thing is, when she came over at it wasn't good. It just wasn't. Now, I got mad based on the fact of, okay, you took me through the platonic role, and then when you finally do have this, which to me, the platonic role to me was a game anyway. Now, because if you got mad seeing me talking to someone and thinking I was going there, your platonic role was a game. That just was a game. So that should not have triggered you out of jealousy wanting to have sex. But when all that took place and we did have sex and it wasn't good, now I'm pissed because all of that was a game. Not necessarily the sex. You as a grown woman are a game to me. You're a game. I mean, I enjoy the platonic part of it, but you're a game, meaning that you're not about who you say you are. You can't open your mouth and speak to be a woman. That's what pissed me off, you know, because, you know, if you were scared about having sex, say that in the beginning. Let's not just say pre-platonic, because when you thought my dick was going to someone else, you weren't scared of it no more. So, you know, it's all how you kind of, to me, how it kind of plays itself out. But, again, that's what we got to kind of be careful with as men, because We don't want to just make it, well, we can, and we do, make it all about the sex, bro. not if you're trying to have something else. Now, I know I said a lot. If you want to respond to it, go ahead, but I'll pull back. But that's kind of where I kind of see that.
No, I'm gonna leave it because I know this conversation is gonna come up again. So I know Mr. Charles got a question, but yeah, it's, when I first heard it, I'm like, okay, I'm not the only one that kind of feels this way, and that's what was interesting about this syndrome that was spoke up before.
It's just like pills, man. They got a name for everything now, bro. You gotta you scratch your wrist. It's a syndrome. It's some type of stuff. They got names for everything. What's your question, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I want to go back to something that was mentioned earlier, and I want to just get your opinion. What is the percentage of men that you know or you think that you know or your buddies that really are really caught up into the physical aspects of a woman more than the total package? I mean, even now at this point, because Mark mentioned it earlier about the big booty, big butt, and the smile and all that too, and getting caught up in that. What do you think the percentage of men that really are into, that's what they really aspire for, or that's what lures them when they think about a woman that they meet?
I'm going to say it's high, bro. I'm going high, 70%, bro. I think it's real high because, you know, for us, that's how it started. And for a lot of us, we haven't matured beyond that. And we're still stuck in the physical element of who she is, what she's built like, you know, what she feels like. And, yeah, so it's high. It's real high, man. It is extremely, much higher than it should be. I understand when you're younger, I'll give it some credence when you're younger, but as you start to age and develop, you know, that level of maturity, that those numbers should be coming down. But, you know, you could tell with some of your partners you talk to, man, when they talk about a woman, you know, a lot of time it's physical. You know, we put ourselves in bad situations based on the physical. You know, there's been countries that go to wars based on the physical. There have been men that go to jail based on the physical. So it's high. Your response, Mr. DeBreeze?
I say 100% because we are visual creatures. We see all of that initially. We see all of that first before we start thinking about the brain and whether they can cook and whether they're good people and all this other stuff. So that's why sex sells, porn, that, you know, is in the billion-dollar industry, the way women dress and all that stuff. But I think over time, you start thinking of the other stuff a lot sooner than, you know, just going by the physical and just going after the physical. I was with some older men not too long ago, and some woman came by. And they were much older than me. And one of them was like, he was humming. And he was like, you know, sometimes you don't have the words to say it. All you got to do, all you can do is sing. And all. So, yeah, it's 100%. I don't care how old you are. You looking at the, that's what brings us in. That's what brings us in. And then we start to peel back the layers and then, oh, my, she's crazy and all this other stuff. But we don't think about that initially. That's why we're always liking the buttons on social media about women shaking their booties and all that stuff. We ain't thinking about, you know, what their name is, how many kids they have, if they're married, whatever. We just go by the physical. I think that's why we're wired that way. And then we start to calm down, and as we start getting the conversation, we figure out everything else. But I say it's 100% physical initially, and then the percentages go down based on whether or not you can engage and whether or not you're really serious about interacting with this person.
Yeah, we're just no good, man. We're no good. We're no good, 100%. We're no good. All of us. Your response, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, it's probably 100%, but I think part of it is, you know, Mark also mentioned about the allowing that booty to make you stay longer, right? Because you all are caught up in the booty. And I know some guys that they see a woman, that you mentioned Dean Reese about or the guys going, a woman to come by and they'll go, ooh, I know somebody just, I'm not going to say their name, they're so close to me and she's damn ridiculous. They go, ooh. And I look at you, what? What you looking at? Oh, right here, man. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I'm like, she all right? Is she all right? She all right? She okay? But then again, I think for me, that after a while, it's like, even with the physical thing, it's like, it's got to be more to it, man. Because after a while, if I can't talk to you or just more of the things that I'm really thinking about, then after a while, that, you know how we are as men, you said, visually, you know, attracted to things. After a while, it's like that shiny toy at Christmas, man. You open up, you're all excited. You got that G.O. Joe with the colorful grip. I'm still waiting on. And then you play with it about four times, and then you go, that's all right. You put it down to the side because you're like, it's not what I thought it was. But some people just keep playing with it, but that's not what you really want. So I don't know. I think it's just different. Certain people are just different. Some people will ride it, as you mentioned, Mark, forever just because of the fact that they're so enamored and so intoxicated by the physical, and they get messed up because it's not good for them. Where on the other hand, it could be something they may not be as attractive, or a person may not be all that, but they bring so much more to the relationship. And it makes it a better relationship. And in time, you can develop a chemistry, particularly physically, because if you're on the same page with that person, man, I'm just going to say this, not like I know now, how I heard about it on TV, that shit can be magical. Anyway, thank you.
you're right on top about that chemistry, man. What develops over time? Woo! Man. I mean, yeah. When this, oh my, Mr. Demetrius, I'm gonna leave it there. Your question, sir.
All right. The next question is, when is it time to say it's enough? When is it time to say it's time to let it go?
When there's signs that you're at an impasse where you can't really get beyond it. And it might can happen before then, but I think that's definitely a sign when you realize that you and this person really just don't have it. You two don't really coincide, and there's no change to that. It's just, it's not there. For whatever reason, you two, you know, it's almost like a plus. You're both a plus, and nobody's a minus. Can't start a battery. You need a plus and a negative to start a battery. So if you're both a plus, it's just, you know, you can't do nothing. There's nothing there. There's no meeting of the minds, you know, and whatever is there, if you're enjoying it, if it is sex, that's cool. But don't look for it to be anything stronger than that. Don't look for it to go any further. I don't think it's going to be any further. And if, you know, if you're enjoying that, that's fine. But usually it's where you know you and that person, the heart, the mind, it's just not there. There's, you know, there's nothing. There's no substance. And sometimes you try to make substance when there is none. You spend a lot of time doing that, but it is what it is. And we're not meant to mesh with everybody. Some people we're just not meant to mesh with. And if you're not meshing with that person on several levels, and, you know, and they're causing you grief, stress, no peace of mind, what are you waiting on? Really. Your response, Mr. Charles?
Yeah, I think you hit that right on point. I think that, like you said, it's connecting, chemistry, but also, what's important to you. If you're not receiving that, then some people hold on for a long time, not just months, but years, hoping things won't get better, and they just tolerate it. But also, too, if you're not a priority, man, with that person, you know, I have to learn that the hard way. If you're not a priority, if you tell me whatever, they want everything to be equal, whatever, but you're not a priority, then it's time to bounce, because it's like, hell, we could just be friends, and that would be minus the stress and everything that I don't need. I can do something else, somewhere else, so do something with someone else. But, yeah, as you said, removing the stress, but if you're not a priority, it's time to bounce.
Yeah. I think we all know it when it's time. We know it. People crack me up when they go ask other people questions. You know it. You just don't want to make the decision.
you know when it's time to pack up and leave. Shut camp down, put on the going out of business sign out front. We know it, man. It's just, do you want to execute it? For whatever reason, you hold back and reluctant to do that, but you know it. Your response, Mr. Demarest.
Yeah, I can't add much more than what you two added, but when you've exhausted everything that you know how to do and you have, you know, done everything that you can do, you got to let it go. And some people, you know, some people do know it, but some people just don't. They want to hang on because they're comfortable. They're comfortable in that particular situation. No matter how horrific it may be, they're comfortable in it. They're comfortable with that person. It's the devil they know, you know, and the devil they don't know, they don't want to be involved with. So they'll hold on to something thinking it'll get better. But when you've exhausted everything that you can, and you tried everything that you could try to make it work, and it doesn't work, then it's your sign that it's time to let it go.
I'm going to get you guys' opinion on something. I sent you this a couple of weeks ago. It was Albert Pujols, you know, decided to divorce his wife right after she had a tumor removed from her brain. I'm like, damn, bro. So was that – how does that feel to you, Missy? Was that a – was the timing just impeccable, or how does that come across? They were married for – I think over 15 years. I can't remember exactly, but it was married for a good while. Your thoughts in here and such. Or reading the story.
Yeah, I would think that you would stick around at least until the person is healthy if you were going to make that decision. Because it made me think that maybe there were some things happening before. You know, it wasn't just because she had this. It was like things weren't working out before. And this was kind of like the tipping scale, but I would think that, you know, as a sign of respect and support, and for a person who's been in your life that long, and if you were friends or are friends, that you at that particular point in the relationship, that you would kind of stick it out and even have the face of being together until that person is fully healed from this. This operation, it's a big and dangerous operation. So I would think that you would be supportive enough to hang around until things kind of got back on track.
How did it make you feel, Mr. Chalmers?
Well, I thought it was off the chain, a little bit obscure, but I agree with Dean Maurice that you want to at least stick around until the person is healthy and showing that you still care. It doesn't mean that you still need to stay and be trapped and be stuck, because you spelled a certain kind of way for a reason. But I think it's just a good sign of who you are as a person to make sure that they're okay. And if you want to move on with your life, so be it. But, yeah, you've been with them for 15 years. You can't wait a little longer. I mean, even if your the way you feel about them changes a little bit, you just want to make sure you're there supporting them and they can recover. That's going to be the case.
That was in bad taste. I mean, my opinion, real bad taste. And at one point, you decided to make her your wife. And, you know, you give it more than that. You just do. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, he got a big-ass young girl waiting for him somewhere. They're trying to get to him. I'm just thinking, I'm just going to come out and say it, because what is the rush at that point? What is the, I mean, this, the minute she comes out of the hospital, you file for a divorce? I mean, what is the rush? So it's like you said, Mrs. Reese, you know, you want to be able to give her some support, kind of be there and lend yourself to, whether you two aren't getting along or not. Her being your wife, she's owed that. She's entitled to it. Gentlemen, appreciate you two coming strong and coming raw, as we do all the time at One Black Man Talk. We'll get together real soon and do it again real soon. Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, y'all stay good. Stay black.